Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'm going to pause the series that I've been doing on the seal, the trumpet, and the bowl judgments, and give an update on the ongoing investigation into the 2020 presidential election. Next week, I'll resume my series in the book of the Revelation. That is, if there are no other issues. I interrupt this series because these forensic audits into the 2020 election are a big story, a teachable moment. Because the larger media outlets are not reporting on the election situation for political reasons. Most people believe the contesting of the 2020 election is over. Biden has won. Any dissent is useless. But that's far from the truth. There is still an active movement building a substantial case against the 2020 election results. And this movement has gotten a second wind now that last week Arizona finished a forensic audit of the ballots and found that 74,000 mail-in ballots had no record of being sent out. Now, this is not right-wing conspiracy theory stuff. This is a fact. And with the Arizona results, now legislators are calling for forensic audits in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Georgia, and in Michigan. You say, well, didn't these states already conduct audits? Yes, but not forensic audits, where the integrity of the ballots were literally examined under a microscope, looking for evidence of ballots that were created by a copy machine. The previous audits only recounted ballots, but that's useless. That could mean simply recounting fake ballots. Any cheating in this election would have been done by inserting into the count fake ballots. So a forensic audit in Arizona has been a real game changer. In the words of one notable politician, this is huge. And what we're going to be seeing over the next few months is an escalation in the battle over the 2020 election. Patriot groups are already beginning to organize Trump 1 rallies to circumvent the mainstream media and get the news out. So the battle over the 2020 election is not dying out. It just took a pause, but it's coming back with a vengeance. And even though Democrats and social media companies, but I repeat myself, are working to silence anyone who questions the results of the 2020 election, their censorship is throwing fuel on the fire. Because if they had nothing to hide, why would they object to these forensic audits? And why are they censoring any news about evidence of election fraud? They're not just refusing to report on it, they're censoring those who do. And their censorship becomes a clear indication of guilt in the court of public opinion. Now, apart from just the political information here, there is a biblical, spiritual, moral lesson God would have us to learn in all this. Remember, that's the point of this program, to examine current events in the light of Scripture, because God is teaching us. God is illustrating His truth about man and sin and God and redemption on this stage we call the world. Election fraud is addressed by the biblical prophets. It's one more application of the doctrine of harmatology, the doctrine of sin. And one text would be Daniel chapter 11, verse 41. In his place, a despicable person will arise, on whom the honor of kingship has not been conferred. But he will come in a time of tranquility and seize the kingdom by intrigue. Now, in a moment, we're going to break down what that verse means, to seize the kingdom by intrigue. But first, a little more about what's going on. I've been tracking the news on this subject for the last 4 months, jotting down names and events, just waiting for the right time to put it all together into a radio program or YouTube. Specifically, waiting for the results of the forensic Arizona audit. Because if there was fraud, the Arizona audit would be the proof to convince the doubters, those sitting on the fence. And it would re-energize those who are already convinced that the election was stolen. You can't make a case, or you can't move forward without proof. And good people have been waiting for the proof, the smoking gun. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 8, do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor humiliates you? You have to have proof. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is a folly and shame to him. Or Deuteronomy chapter 13, verse 14, then you shall investigate and search out and inquire thoroughly if it is true and the matter established that this abomination has been done among you. We may suspect an evil because we know the nature of man. Any political party that promotes the killing of babies, that promotes homosexual perversion, will also lie, steal, and cheat. Their basis for morality is pragmatism. The ends justify the means. So let's not be naive concerning where that leads. But nevertheless, when it comes to making an indictment, we need to wait for proof or evidence. And we ought to have confidence that God will bring it to light, because that's what his word promises, that nothing is hidden that will not be brought to light. In giving instruction to his disciples before sending them out on their evangelistic mission, this is what Jesus told his disciples, specifically concerning their opponents and their persecutors. Matthew chapter 10, verse 26. Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Why did Jesus feel the need to let his disciples know this? Well, because the persecutors of the truth will operate by deceit, by cover-up. They will claim virtue, but secretly be committing evil behind closed doors. They will claim that their policies are helpful, but hide evidence of the harm. And it will be frustrating for God's people, because we know they're lying, that they're covering up the real results of their policies, their lifestyles, their theology. But fear not, God will make sure that their sin will find them out. So Jesus encourages us by promising us there is nothing covered or concealed that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be made known. So don't fear them. Don't think that the left has outwitted the right, that they will get away with their crimes. Now, God may do this work by exposing the hidden things of darkness providentially or supernaturally apart from us. But most often, God works through us. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11, God commands us to expose the deeds of darkness. While you and I have been going about life, there have been hundreds of Christian activists petitioning their state legislators, fighting in courts, organizing recounts and audits. There are 1,000 volunteers in the Arizona forensic audit. Patriots who gave up their time and money to travel to Arizona for a month. There was even a retired Army general who was helping out. The former Arizona Secretary of State was involved in the audit. Now, I say Christian activists because from most of what I have read, it is citizens with some sort of Christian testimony and Christian basis for morality who are mostly behind these election investigations. The secular Republican leadership has rolled over and done little in this regard. It's Christian legislators like Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania who are leading the charge against election fraud. Daniel chapter 11, verse 32. In regard to fighting against corrupt government, the people who know their God will display strength and take action. Those who have insight among the people will give understanding to the many. Now, the immediate context of that prophecy is probably about the Maccabean family that fought against rulers who attempted to destroy Jehovah worship. But the prophecy has timeless application. You know, many Christians have saved many countries. Check out Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 15. There is found in the city a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. You know, I'm really, you know, just put to shame and convicted by all of these Christian activists who are busy in the work while all we do is sit behind our computers and read the news. It's like we're watching a sports game, you know, between the pagans versus the Christians, but we're not involved in the game. Now I get it. We're not all called to be Daniels and Josephs involved in the civic arena, but we can all send a check. We can all vote. We can all write our legislators. We can all attend rallies. We can all spread the news on social media. So my point is this. The truth is going to come out, but God often supernaturally does this by motivating his people to bring the truth to light. We're the salt of the earth. Now, practically, as far as the truth coming out, if the left cheated in the 2020 election, it had to be a coordinated effort by a large group of insiders. They would have had to have printed thousands of fake ballots and insert them in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Georgia and Arizona, all the swing states. Ballot drops in the night, and this would be a big undertaking. Now, someone could have simply manipulated numbers in the software, but that wouldn't be enough. There actually had to be a coordinated effort to print fake ballots to match the numbers. Now, that seems pretty unlikely to us, because who would have the chutzpah to do this? But remember, this isn't simply about people wanting their favorite politician in office. This is about money, salaries, livelihood. Securing millions of dollars in funding from the federal government for your ideological organization, like the $1.9 trillion COVID relief stimulus package passed by the Democrats, which had little to do with COVID, but funded all sorts of Democrat social operations. And now the Biden administration is proposing $3.5 trillion for an infrastructure rebuilding plan, which is not just about roads and bridges, but for social programs and for grants to all sorts of Democrat social organizations. So follow the money. But that's a side note. My point is that so many people had to be involved in fixing the 2020 election that eventually someone's going to squeal. Mistakes had to be made. The numbers are not going to add up. Fake ballots are going to be exposed. We're not just talking about a few voters here who double voted or some voters who weren't registered on time. We're talking about the dumping of millions of fake ballots into the system. And with a forensic audit, that should be easy to find. On election night, President Trump was ahead in Pennsylvania by 700,000 votes. The tabulating was mysteriously shut down. And over the next 3 days, Trump's lead in Pennsylvania was erased and Biden won. If there were fake ballots injected into the system, that will be easy to find with a forensic audit. Again, not a recount, but a forensic audit that looks for ballots on different paper with different ink, ballots sent in the mail with no paper trail. And if the political left has nothing to hide, they should be all for these forensic audits. They should actually be cheering these forensic audits, because these audits will finally put a rest to any doubts about the 2020 election. But the Maricopa County Board of Electors in Arizona, all Democrats, for the past 3 months have been doing everything in their power to stop these forensic audits, bringing in lawyers and trying to use the courts to shut it down, refusing to hand over material evidence, Maricopa County did its own audits using two cybersecurity firms, and these firms found no fraud in the election, but again, it was simply a check of a few voting machines. Not a single ballot was looked at. So after hearing about what a forensic audit could do, the Arizona State Senate contracted to have a forensic audit performed of the ballots. This audit finished its examination of the ballots 2 weeks ago. And because there was a discrepancy in the number of ballots counted by the Maricopa Election Board versus the forensic audit, the Arizona State Senate issued a third audit of its own just to count the mail-in ballots to make sure the number's right. The Senate's recount results should be in next week. But in the meantime, last week, the Arizona State Senate held a hearing to review the preliminary results of the forensic audit. And the results so far, there were 74,243 mail-in ballots with no clear record of having been sent out. Thousands of ballots, duplicate ballots, were either missing serial numbers or they had unreadable serial numbers. The ballots were poorly printed and unaligned, forcing too many of them to go for adjudication. 11,326 people who voted in the 2020 election do not show up on the voter rolls prior to December 4th. And there was a deliberate overwriting of security logs in the software. Those were the main anomalies. The audit people are not yet revealing the true vote totals for Biden or Trump, and how many of these undocumented ballots were for Biden or Trump, and that will come out when the audit is finally complete. So Biden is said to have won Arizona, but realize this is a state where Trump lost to Biden by only 10,500 votes. In 2020, the Republican Party in Arizona registered 103,000 more new Republicans than Democrats did. And this is a state that hasn't voted Democrat in presidential elections for the last 30 years. It's a solid Republican state. The Republicans control the state Senate, the state House, and the governorship. And that's why this forensic audit was able to be done in this state. If there was cheating, the cheaters chose the wrong state. But in Arizona, Maricopa County is a Democrat stronghold, and they're fighting these audits. After the Senate hearing, the head of the Maricopa County Board of Electors released a statement criticizing the Senate hearings. Quote, "What we have heard today represents an alternative reality that has veered out of control since the November general election. Senate leadership should be ashamed. They broadcasted the half-baked theories of the deep rig crowd to the world today." Well, fine. But that's meaningless because in his statement, he offers no explanation for the 74,000 ballot discrepancy. The cover-up by the election board is either because the board is criminal or they know that they have been negligent in documentation. And of course, they're going to die on the hill for this, because if they're negligent, then they're fired. And if fraud is discovered, that's a federal crime. But it undermines also the authority of the Biden administration. So the Democrat Party has sent lawyers into Arizona to fight this forensic audit. President Trump made a statement about this, quote, "The Democrats, upon hearing the news of the court order, have sent 73 lawyers to Arizona in an effort to stop the recount and full transparency because they know what they did," unquote. Given last week's audit report, one Arizona Senator, Wendy Rogers, is calling for a new 2020 presidential election in Arizona and demanding that the 2020 election be decertified. From Twitter, she writes, "I've had enough. With the tens of thousands of ballots mailed without being registered, and over 10,000 people who voted after registering after November 3rd, the failure of Maricopa to turn over the 40% machines, the passwords that Dominion still refuses to turn over, and tens of thousands of unauthorized queries demonstrating how insecure the election was, I call for the Biden electors to be recalled to Arizona, and a new election must be conducted. Arizona electors must not be rewarded fraudulently, and we need to get this right. Wisconsin legislators are now calling for forensic audits of their state ballots. Georgia legislators are calling for forensic audits. Pennsylvania legislators are calling for forensic audits. In Pennsylvania, Senator Doug Mastriano is leading this, and he's asking two of the main counties in question to hand over ballots. Otherwise, they will be subpoenaed. These counties are refusing, and the Democrat governor and the Democrat attorney general are saying they will do everything in their power to prevent these audits. And then a most unusual thing happened last week. After calling for forensic audits in Pennsylvania, Biden went to Philadelphia to give a speech railing against claims of election fraud. Something is up. They're afraid of something. Let me show you a portion of that speech.
Physical threats, intimidation, and pressure. They did so with unyielding courage and faith in our democracy. With recount after recount after recount, court case after court case, the 2020 election was the most scrutinized election ever in American history. Challenge after challenge brought to local, state, and election officials, state legislatures, state and federal courts, even to the United States Supreme Court, not once, but twice. More than 80 judges, including those appointed by my predecessor, heard the arguments. In every case, neither cause nor evidence was found to undermine the national achievement of administering the historic election in the face of such extraordinary challenges. Audits, recounts were conducted. In Arizona and Wisconsin, in Georgia, it was recounted three times. It's clear. For those who challenge the results and question the integrity of the election, no other election has ever been held under such scrutiny and such high standards. The big lie is just that, a big lie.
So a few corrections here. The United States Supreme Court did not hear any election fraud cases. They refused to hear them. They didn't want to get involved. The Supreme Court and lower courts kicked it back to the legislators. The legislators didn't want to deal with it, and they were trying to kick it to the courts. And correction, there was evidence of election fraud, over 1,000 affidavits, and that is evidence. Biden's just given the same old talking points that the recounts prove that the election results were legitimate. But he didn't address the main issue of auditing the actual legitimacy of the paper ballots. His speech was nothing more than sloganeering without proof. And the irony is that Biden was speaking about voter rights. But to deny forensic audits is to deny voter rights. The greatest threat to voter rights is not voter ID, but election fraud. So how does he know for sure it's a big lie? Prove it by letting the critics do the forensic audits, stop stonewalling, and stop influencing the media to censor criticism of the election. Now, a whole program could be dedicated to the media's response here. You know, we understand that a virtuous media would weed out falsehood. But it's very obvious that the media is not being objective when it comes to the election. They have a leftist bias. They have concluded that there is no fraud without any serious investigation or consideration of the arguments on the other side. A Salon magazine article The fake Arizona audit is confusing, idiotic, and endless, which means it's working as intended. Trump and his allies are building the foundation for the 2024 coup effort by sowing more confusion about voting now. No proof in this article, just accusations. CNN, fact check. Arizona audit chief baselessly raises suspicion about 74,000 ballots. Well, how is it baseless? The audit showed that there was no documentation for 74,000 ballots. NPR, experts call it a clown show, but Arizona's audit is a disinformation blueprint. Again, no proof, just a biased subjectivity that the audits are a clown show. One more angle needs to be covered in regard to this media response. The president's press secretary, Psaki, unwittingly revealed that the Biden administration is involved in social media censorship. So watch this clip.
These social media platforms and those engagements typically happen through members of our senior staff, but also members of our COVID-19 team. Given as Dr. Murthy conveyed, this is a big issue of misinformation specifically on the pandemic. In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. We're working with doctors and medical professionals to connect to connected medical experts who are popular with their audiences with accurate information and boost trusted content. So we're helping get trusted content out there. We also created the COVID Community Corps to get factual information into the hands of local messengers.
So these are the actions of our federal government. They have increased disinformation research. They are flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. And they are helping get trusted content out there. The Biden administration is monitoring and flagging what it deems to be misinformation and then passing those violations onto Facebook so that Facebook can censor certain voices that put out information that contradict the Biden administration. The government is working with these private media companies to impose censorship on the American people. And this is unconstitutional. And Biden officials like Jen Psaki sees nothing wrong with it. Now, Psaki was referring to COVID-19 disinformation, but it's not a far leap to also censor political speech, such as election investigations. If you question the 2020 election, Facebook, Twitter, Google, YouTube will remove your piece, claiming you're spreading disinformation. How do they know it's disinformation? Because with bias, they have chosen to believe that the election was clean and Biden won, and the objective media would allow for contrary opinions and research. This is a scary time in American history. But nevertheless, no matter what the media does, let's not forget God's promise. Matthew chapter 10, verse 26. For there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. So what are the biblical lessons so far? Unprincipled, ungodly people will cheat. They will cover up the truth. But the truth will always come out. And lastly, God calls his people to be involved in exposing the hidden things of darkness. But now let's look back at that biblical prophecy about the despicable person who comes to power by intrigue, Daniel chapter 11, verse 21. In his place, a despicable person will arise on whom the honor of kingship has not been conferred. But he will come in the time of tranquility and seize the kingdom by intrigue. Now this prophecy is about the Antichrist, the man of lawlessness, this coming demonic world leader spoken about in the book of the Revelation, in the book of Daniel, 2 Thessalonians, 1 John chapter 2. But even though this is a prophecy about the Antichrist, All Bible students know that it has an application for every age. As the Apostle John writes in 1 John chapter 2, children, it's the last hour. And just as you have heard that Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have appeared. From this we know that it's the last hour. Now, the Apostle John was not negating the truth of a coming Antichrist. He was actually confirming it. But he also pointed out that there will be many other world leaders who oppose Christ. There have been many kings and Caesars and presidents who have been forerunners and foreshadowers of the Antichrist. So what we read about someone who has not had the honor of kingship conferred but comes to power by intrigue is something that Christians should look for in every age: illegitimate leadership. And understand that the ungodly will lie and cheat to get into power. Whatever conventions a country might have for determining leadership, by the vote, by heritage, by a council, ungodly individuals will cheat the system. Expect it. Now, I said that in Daniel chapter 11, verse 21, this despicable person is about the Antichrist, but it's actually more complicated than that. Daniel chapter 11 is prophecies about the pagan kings that will arise and persecute Israel during the time between the Jews' return from Babylon in about 500 BC until the coming of Christ in Bethlehem. Now, according to the full description of this despicable person in Daniel chapter 11, verse 21, this person is Antiochus Epiphanes, who ruled over Syria and Israel from 175 BC to 165. He worked to wipe out Jehovah worship. He defiled the temple in Jerusalem, sacrificed a pig in the temple, set up an image to Zeus. He outlawed all biblical customs and mandates. The celebration of Hanukkah by the Jews is the rededication of the temple after Antiochus was defeated. Antiochus's defilement of the temple in 170 BC becomes a type or a foreshadowing of a greater defilement of the temple, a greater despicable person in the future, the Antichrist. And his abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel in Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, spoken of by Jesus in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15, and spoken of by Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. At the end of Daniel chapter 11, Daniel transitions from prophecies about Antiochus to prophecies about the Antichrist coming in the future. How do we know this? Because Daniel begins to write wider prophecies that could not apply to Antiochus. And this is very common in Old Testament prophecy. Double fulfillment. A lesser, incomplete, soon fulfillment, but a greater complete fulfillment in the distant future. Daniel chapter 11, verse 36 is where the transition begins, where Daniel moves from speaking about Antiochus to the future Antichrist. Verse 36, then the king will do as he pleases and will exalt and magnify himself above every god and will speak monstrous things against the God of gods. And he will prosper until indignation is finished, for that which is decreed will be done. Until indignation is finished is final day of the Lord language. And in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, Daniel goes on in the prophecy to say that at that time there will be a great tribulation such as never taken place, and there will be a resurrection from the dead. The identical words Jesus used of the future in Matthew 24. And we also know that Daniel moves from writing about Antiochus to the Antichrist because in the text, after speaking about Antiochus, in Daniel 11:35, we read a transitional phrase because it's still to come at an appointed time. Daniel 11:35. Some of those who have insight will fall, in order to refine, purge, and to make them pure until the end time, because it's still to come at the appointed time. Now, there's all sorts of possible translations of this Hebrew. Some believe it means it will come to pass at the appointed time, or it's decreed. The King James Version translates it, "For it is still to come at an appointed time." The NIV translates it, "For it will still come at an appointed time." The New American Standard Bible translates it, "It's still to come at an appointed time." So the phrase seems to mean it's going to happen again in the future. There is going to be another greater despicable person at the end of time, and that person will prosper until indignation is finished. So, like Antiochus, on whom the honor of kingship has not been conferred, but who will come to power by intrigue, we can expect the same character in the Antichrist. And back in Daniel chapter 8, verse 23, we read another description of Antiochus and the Antichrist. In the latter period of their rule, when the transgressors have run their course, a king will arise, insolent and skilled in intrigue. His power will be mighty, but not by his own power. And he will destroy to an extraordinary degree and prosper and perform his will. He will destroy mighty men and the holy people. And through his shrewdness, he will cause deceit to succeed by his influence. And he will magnify himself in his heart, and he will destroy many while they're at ease. He will even oppose the prince of princes, but he will be broken without human agency. Isn't it fascinating that God wants his people to know that evil will come to power by skill, by intrigue, by shrewdness, by deceit, by influence peddling? Now, given the prophecies in the book of the Revelation that all the world will follow the Antichrist, it's really hard to imagine that the Antichrist is going to have to cheat to get into power. And given the apostasy in America today, I can't imagine that evil actors are going to have to cheat to take over America. But evil will always lie and cheat. Maybe not in the vote, but in false promises and ideological lies. The Antichrist will not be telling the truth that he's coming to destroy the world and kill everyone because he hates people. He's going to promise a utopia. And he's going to cheat by censoring his opposition, trying to convey the image that everyone is in agreement with him, that there is no sane opposition. What does it mean to come to power by intrigue? The King James translates it flattery. The Hebrew here refers to smoothness or slipperiness, as in the case of a smooth tongue. The word is used in Psalm chapter 5, verse 9. There's nothing reliable in what they say. Their inward part is destruction. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with the tongue. Or rather, they use intrigue with their tongue. So remember that verse, Psalm chapter 5, verse 9, when dealing with unprincipled politicians. Antiochus came to power illegitimately by working a plot to murder the two other legitimate heirs to the throne. He cheated. Even though all authorities are established by God, Romans chapter 13, there are obedient authorities and there are disobedient authorities. God allows disobedient authorities to get into power by lying and deceiving and manipulating, but then God judges those authorities. All is not fair in love and in war and politics. God expects moral behavior. It's never right to do wrong in order to get a chance to do right or to put yourself in the place of authority. God wants us to know that a sign or an operation of evil authorities is that they get into power by cheating. So be on your guard. Thank you for listening. Thank you for including God and country as just one small part of your discipleship in the Word. Keep discerning the events in the world around us through the Word of God so that we will be sanctified thereby. Don't forget to subscribe, to to like, to share, to leave a comment below. And may Jesus Christ reign.